This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're very fortunate today to have a nice, pleasant day outside, sunny skies, and a high projected to be below 80. That's a welcome relief from a brutal stretch of weeks, particularly last week, where heat indices were above 100. We just emerged from nearly 90 straight days of excessive heat with highs at or above 87, and that's on top of unusually wet conditions we've endured so far this year. So, what does your garden or your landscape look like after this strange weather? What do you need to do as July reaches its twilight and August looms? It's the monthly gardening show on Cincinnati Edition, and we're taking your questions, calls, emails, and social media posts for a full hour. And we are joined today by Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoltz. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hey.
Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadows Song Farm, Peter Huttinger. Welcome, Peter.
Good afternoon.
And Boone County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. If you'd like to join the conversation, we know you've got lots of questions or comments about the condition of your garden, what you need to be doing. 513-419-7100. You can also email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. So here we are. At the end of July, we've endured some pretty brutal conditions in terms of the heat. Last week was so oppressive. And now today's really nice, but that's certainly been the exception. And we've also had this extremely wet season so far. So let me open it up to you guys. We'll start with you, Sarah. Mm-hmm. What has this stuff done to our landscapes and our gardens?
Well, it's helped us because we had to turn off our irrigation system, so that's nice. Our tomatoes aren't, you know, reddening up some other crops as well as we would like them, I guess. I guess harvesting has been a little down as far as like tomatoes. Peppers have been great, but some other crops haven't been producing as well, like some of our vine crops. Mildew has been, you know, up and running crazy. Insects are out and about. So I guess it's just kind of all over. Yeah.
And Peter, what are you seeing out there?
Well, I agree with what Sarah just said. One of the things is that when you have a periods of a lot of rain and then you move into these drought conditions, it really dries out and builds a crust on the soil. So, which just can be really problematic when you get that next rain and then you get erosion.
And what about you, David? Are you surviving all right?
Oh, doing fine. I'm glad we've had the rain with the heat, and that really did. If we had had the heat without the rain, we would have been in kind of some dire straits with some of our plants. But the thing that has amazed me is how spotty these thunderstorms have been. I really encourage people to get a rain gauge and put it out, because when you hear on the weather report that so-and-so had 2 inches of rain, it's really possible that you may have had a half inch or even less or none at all. They're really very spotty, and we are seeing that. There's areas of Boone County which have gotten almost 4 inches of rain in the last week, and there are some areas that have had maybe an inch. So
water's important, of course, for growing, but is there a situation where you can have too much?
Absolutely.
Yes, there have been
flooding.
Are we
seeing that?
Yeah, there was some flooding with some grower had some watermelons, so they've been completely lost or postponed. They've had to replant. Corn is another one. I'm starting to see that in the markets now, but usually by this time, you know, especially around 4th of July when people are hungry for those crops that they want to grill out and whatnot, but they weren't there at the 4th of July market. So, yeah, I mean, too much rain can definitely be detrimental to a crop or crops. And I will also mention that your lawn has really probably browned out, which is you probably went a week or two without mowing, which is okay. Remember that our home lawns are, most of them are tall fescue, which is a cool season crop. So they don't like this humidity. So they'll brown out, they go dormant, and then now they're starting to green up again. So,
Peter, is there any impact on our vegetation, our gardens, our flowers that we put in the landscape when we have this sort of back and forth where we have several days of heavy rainfall and then the rain goes away and we're just brutalized by the sun and the humidity?
Well, yeah. I mean, like one of the things we really kind of look at is that extended rain, a lot of rain early on, cooler weather early on. Say, for instance, your crops like tomatoes and peppers really slowed down. Then you had to really be careful with your tomatoes in terms of fungal diseases. It was important to limb them up and make sure they have a lot of air and space around them. But also then with some things, our tomatoes haven't been set in so much, but I have noticed with some of the cherry tomatoes that were fruiting earlier and were coming ripe, is that it would dry out, then you get a bunch of rain, and they'd have a tendency to split. Mm-hmm. Or crack, and then so those are kinds of things. Also, this going back and forth between particularly a heavy rain with a thunderstorm after it's been dry, it really compacts the soil. So I would really encourage people to, when it's dry, is to get out there and do a dust mulch or a light hoeing of your soil. And for one thing, that'll help you control your weeds, but it opens up just the very top of the soil so that the soil is able to receive rain when it does come.
What about the pests? What is this weather doing in terms of helping bugs and critters emerge and hunt down our gardens and our landscape materials?
Well, it hasn't slowed them down at all. They're out there, and we're just seeing a lot of the tomato hornworms pretty prevalent right now. I've even seen usually we have mites affecting things when it's really dry out, and we're seeing some spider mite damage on a lot of things, and some aphids, of course. The usual things. It hasn't slowed them down at all. They're out there and prevalent. And Sarah and I just got an email from our plant pathologist in Lexington, and we are getting Tennessee is now they've confirmed this late blight disease of tomatoes, and it can come in on air currents and very easy for it to be transferred up into this area. And back in 2009-10, we lost a lot of our tomato fields to late blight disease. So that's something to watch out for.
Go ahead, Sarah.
When controlling, insects or disease, just be very mindful of, one, get that properly identified, but also the temperatures, because these crazy high humidity temperatures, you can actually do more damage to plant material, even if you're using an organic product or a synthetic. So just be mindful. High humidity is not helpful or beneficial, especially the oils or the soaps that you may be using organically. So just be mindful. In fact, we've opted to use beneficial predatory insects a lot of times in our gardens for aphid control, and we just ordered some for azalea lacewing, and hopefully we'll be getting those in the next few days. One, it's awesome to see it happen. Mother Nature just devour. And then there's no pesticides that we're using, and it's a good teaching moment as well. So azalea lacewing, and some insects like the azalea lacewing, they have multiple generations a year. And so when we have these prolonged warmer temperatures, that can increase the amount of generations a year. So it's really important both entomology and pathology to understand the disease life cycle.
Are there any pests that are encouraged or, I guess, happier about the weather conditions that we're having now? Is there anybody that, or any type of insect out there that prefers this type of extreme weather we've had with the heavy wetness and the hotness?
It's not an insect, but slugs just love it. They will, hostas, they'll devour those. They'll get on a lot of your vegetables as well. But they love that that wet, kind of cool, damp area around the base of plants, and so they're pretty prevalent.
And they always leave that little trail of evidence that they've been here.
They're disgusting.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. We want to hear about the conditions of your garden, how you're keeping it up with the heavy heat we've had, the heavy rainfall that we've had as well. 513-419-7100. Our experts are standing by to take your questions and your comments. So here we are again at the end of July, with August right around the corner. Pretty much the middle of summer, technically. What's on our to-do list for our gardens, our landscapes, and things we need to be doing, Peter?
Well, you can start thinking about succession crops in terms of vegetables. So right now where we have some collards that are sort of at the end. And actually, you know, you guys were talking about the aphids. I've never had aphids on collards this early in the year. We did have that problem recently. And so we will follow those crops with other coal crops. So if you're a gardener, you can, you know, in advance, you can start sowing some seeds now in your trays to plant out things like cabbages, collards, mustard greens, so forth.
And Sarah, what's on your to-do list?
Oh, my. Weed control. So that's always in practicing good sanitation. I think I've said that like five times today alone, is, you know, with insects or pathology, that's been on my mind the last week or so. So I think that's – weed control has just been always a challenge, especially when we're trying to try new methods or try to be more sustainable into our vegetable garden and in our landscape. So with this weather, it's been interesting, to say the least.
And David, what should we be doing right now?
I'm still planting. I really it's plenty of time to get another cucumber crop in. More squash can go in to supplement. More green beans. All those things can you still have plenty of time on those. And like Peter, I'm starting my broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower. All those things do better in the fall here than they do in the spring, and so it's now time to get those. That fall transplants can be somewhat tough, but now there are some discount stores and that are starting to carry those in the fall. So don't give up on gardening. You can still a tremendous amount of growing season left. Garlic can be planted about now, and you can get your garlic sets and get those in the ground right now.
What about pumpkins? When do we start planting those?
Well, they should have already been planted.
Yeah. I think of them as such a fall offering, right? Yeah, go to the pumpkin patch and all that.
Well, that's a good point, because when you look at a seed packet or your seed catalogs, there's a lot of information, but what it's really important to see is the mature day to harvest. And so you can find – most pumpkins are like 110, 120 days. Sometimes you can find a 90-day. So maybe 2-3 weeks ago at one of our community gardens at the detention center in Newport, I just couldn't find a 90-day, so I planted 110-day and just keeping my fingers. And they've germinated. They're sprouting. They're ready to go. So I'm just hoping that Mother Nature will, you know, late October, early November, that they'll be fine. But just know that when you're planning that, you know, they have a maturity date to harvest.
Last month, one of you all, or maybe another one of our garden experts that rotates in and out of here, left us some pumpkin seeds, and that was very kind, and I missed my opportunity to grab some and plant them. But
yeah, those were all from Johnny Seed Company, and some of those had some pretty short days to maturity on them, but you're really too late on all those right now. You should be having flowers on them by now and starting to set some fruit.
So if you haven't planted the pumpkins, you're headed to the pumpkin patch
exactly.
This fall.
Exactly,
yeah.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone lines now. We've got Wes on the line. Hi, Wes. What's your question or comment?
Well, I have a question about my cucumber plant. I think it's a regular cucumber, but I'm a first-time gardener, and I'm having trouble getting any of the female flowers to actually open up so I can get them pollinated. So I have a bunch of male flowers on the vine, very few female flowers, and they seem to turn brown and die before they'll open up.
All right, Wes, we'll hang up and let our experts talk about it. Thanks for the call.
There are cucumber varieties where they're primarily male that they put in as a pollinator for the female, and I don't think that's what – if you just bought a seed packet, I doubt that's what it is. I think you just need to give it a little bit of time. A lot of times on your pumpkin, squash, and cucumbers, the first flowers that open are all males, and you just have to wait a little bit, and those should come on. And again, don't be afraid if – you know, to go ahead and replant some new cucumbers right now. You've got plenty of season left to do that. So
good luck with that frat house of a cucumber crop, Wes. We wish you all the best. We also got a message from Florence. She asks, is this weather good or bad for the invasive plant brush honeysuckle? The soil under it is relatively dry.
Well, to remove it with the dampness, I think it would be great to, for weed control, that is great as long as you don't compact the soil. But As far as they, that's why invasive species are invasive, is because they're very tolerable of all weather conditions.
They, that particular one is really a nasty one.
Yeah,
it is spread by birds. It was brought to this country to be kind of a by the USDA to fill in some erosion areas, and it's done that, but it has really gotten out of control. And they've done some research with it, and it seems to be can carry out photosynthesis as easily in shade as it can in full sun, and so it's adaptable.
Yeah. But with damp soils, I mean, it doesn't have a deep tap root. It's more of a lateral root structure. So you can, you know, up to a 2, even a 3-inch caliper one, you can rock them back and forth, right to left, and then forward and backwards, and then often pull them straight out, and they just shake the root off and try and disturb the soil as little as you can. But this weather, particularly with the young saplings, it's a great time to get in there and just pull them.
We'll have more tips from our experts and more answers to your questions. Call us 513-419-7100. The Gardening Show will continue after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our gardening and landscape experts, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Hometo Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Call us, join us, 513-419-7100. We're talking about anything you want to talk about related to gardens and yards and landscapings and bugs and animals and all that, especially as it relates to the excessive, oppressive heat that we've had and all that heavy rainfall. You can also hit us up on email, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show. We'll go back to the phone lines now. Deborah's on the line. Hi, Deborah. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I've been so envious of all the beautiful roses I've seen, but unfortunately, mine were like eaten alive by the aphids. And wanted some recommendations on how to avoid that next year.
All right, Deborah, we'll hang up and let our experts give you some tips on how best to approach your rose bushes. How do we help Deborah?
If it's just aphids that's the problem, you can probably do a good job with just some of the soap materials. They will, you're going to have to reapply them quite a bit. But sometimes if you can just break the cycle with the aphids, they will not come back, or you can just deter them enough that you get away with it. But, you know, roses, depending on what kind they are, they're a pretty tough thing to grow in our area, and those that do seem to have success put a lot of synthetic chemicals, fungicides and insecticides.
Yeah, and there is the Rosa rugosa, which is an older kind of, I don't know if it's necessarily what you call an antique rose, but it's the one that gets the large hips that you use in like rose hips tea, and they're a lot more disease resistant. I'm not saying they're, you know, nothing will bother them. But we have one at home that's not even in the best location, and it really does, you know, it does fairly well. And it's extremely fragrant, much more than a lot of the tea roses.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. We've got Stephanie up next. Hi, Stephanie. What's your question or comment?
Hi. This is in relation to micro clover to replace grass seed. I planted this last year and then threw some more seed out there this year, and I've been really pleasantly surprised at how I have a very small yard, but how it's really kind of controlled the weeds. I just am one of those people that does not want to spray anything to kill weeds, and I've been trying different things to do that over the years, and I have been impressed with how even during the recent dry weather, it didn't brown out. In fact, I was watering my border perennials around it and not watering the clover, and it's it did fine. I just kind of wanted to know, like, are there any disadvantages to it? And I even start thinking of things like city places where property where they could use it, or school property, instead of lawns that you really have to maintain so much and maybe, you know, control it with spraying.
All right, Stephanie, we appreciate the call. We'll hang up and let the experts take a look at this question as well. So she's replaced her grass with micro clover and wants to know whether there's some disadvantage to that.
Well, good for her. I think it's great. I don't know micro clover. I don't know whether that's a Dutch clover or, the only disadvantage I can see to it is I used to, run around barefooted quite a bit. And when that is in flower, bees are all over it. And so you can step on those and get a sting. But I think it looks good. And a lot of people blend it with their lawns. And the clover, of course, is a legume. It makes its own nitrogen. If you don't have small children, I think it's a really good option.
I'm looking on Penn State University, which has a wonderful turf graft science program. And Micro clover is a selection from white clover that has small leaves and a lower growth habit. So they've probably have bred this, it sounds like, to just be more of a turf type clover, which I know that UK has also been researching that for athletic fields. But unfortunately, looking at the size of the flower, like David was saying, on athletic fields, bees are still coming around to them. So
we have had orchardists or vineyards put in some clover with their grass. And their comment was, well, deer really like the clover. So you do attract some deer with it.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. Up next is Tom. Hi, Tom. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yes, I live in Western Hills, and I just ran across, it's so funny, in a box of photographs, seeds I recovered last summer from Russian sunflowers I grew. And is it too late to plant them?
Yeah, the Russian is a really large sunflower, and I would say, I mean, you can, the seed's probably not going to stay viable for too long, so you might want to just go ahead and try it. I don't know. That's a really big one, and it probably has a pretty long period before it'll go to flower.
So they probably would not last until next year.
I don't – well, the seed probably would, but you could try some of them, try a few of them this year. I think you're too late on it for this year.
And also, I would think if you were to just broadcast them or nicely place them in, in the soil, you would have some competition with some wildlife.
And there you go, Tom. Good luck with those Russian seeds. Appreciate the call very much. 513-419-7100 is the number to hook up with us here. Up next is Don. Hi, Don. What's your question or comment?
What can I do about the cabbage worms that are working on my kale?
All right, Don. We'll hang up and see what our experts can do about your cabbage worm problem.
I think we've got a good alternative for
you. I didn't know cabbage worms would like kale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And overnight.
That whole family, they're non-discriminatory.
Okay. So what do we do?
Well, BT is a biological that you can do, and it actually destroys the intestinal system of the caterpillar. And so that's something, and it's fortunately now it's fairly available at nurseries and different, gardening stores. Some people will also use certain things as, kind of a trap crop is another thing you can do. Like I find that the most difficult thing for me to grow really is collards without insect damage. But I have noticed that when I have collards in the garden, kale, chard, and different plants that might be susceptible to these insects, are sort of spotless. The collards are ravaged. But the BT is a really good solution.
Make sure you might want to soak that kale in a little bit of salt water before you eat it, because those cabbage worms take on the same color as what they're eating, and you don't want to make a mistake and miss some of those. And
eat one.
That's exactly right.
Well, it might be a good source of protein, I suppose. It might not taste so good, but kale's not really that great either, if I may editorialize for a moment. We got a message from Donna. She says that Japanese beetles have done damage to her 2-year-old peach trees and wants to know what she can do about those.
I'm trying to figure out, hand picking actually is not impossible to do. Don't use a trap anywhere around them, because you're just going to bring more of them in. And really, the insecticide 7 will nail them in a hurry. And it's you can put that on, and you should be getting fairly close, depending on what variety is, to picking them. And so check that carefully, and then make sure whatever you use on them adhere to that waiting period before harvest. So 7, I think, is got a couple of days on before you can harvest those things after you apply it. There's probably neem might be a fairly decent on it.
Just worry about foliage burn.
Yeah. 7, the insecticide 7 will take, but as soon as it dries, they're going to come back in. So you want to apply that, and then hopefully you'll be able to harvest them quickly thereafter.
And when you say hand picking, do you mean kind of getting up in the trees?
Yeah, people, you just take a little bit of soap and water, and you go out in a jar and just put them in there.
And they're interesting insects. They're not very intelligent. So when they're wing in the morning, when there's a little dew, they like to get in tight spots around on the around a flower or fruit area, and they're usually in bunches. And they need the sunshine to really wake up and to become active, to dry off that dew off their body. And so if you want to hand pick, do it earlier in the morning as well. And then with the Japanese beetle, there's also the green June beetle that's out and about flying. So don't get those two confused. Their control is very similar, and their life cycle is similar, and where the larvae overwinter is in the soil. So if you need more information about their life cycle and control, we can definitely help you with that. But also, their life cycle is about to end. So just know that, and you can intercept that life cycle if you want to do some curative control in the soil around your landscape.
Just wait till they die.
The adults. So the adults, and then she'll lay their eggs in the soil, and then that life cycle continues underneath the soil, and it will take all winter long, and then they will then come back up in the soil in midsummer.
We got an email from Dan, and I think he's referencing something that we talked about earlier. And David, this may have been a comment that you made when we were talking about what should we be planting now in order to prepare for fall. And Dan says hardneck garlic is, I've lost his message, hardneck garlic is still in harvest mode. And the best planting time in this area is late October to early November, he says, not now. So is that a different?
I'm ordering it now, and I'm not going to be in any real hurry to get it in the ground, but I plant mine August, September. I'd like to get a little bit of growth on it prior to the fall freeze back. So I don't know. I either way, if that's working for him, I'll try some a little bit later. And really, I encourage people to grow hardneck garlic because it's easier to grow for us. And secondly, the garlic that you grow is so much more flavorful than what you buy at the store.
Maybe Dan represents the vampire community. He's trying to get us to delay and stall so that we don't have any garlic this season coming up.
But you can plant in October, like you said, November, like he said. And the benefit of that is that in terms of succession, you have your early crops, maybe some mid-season, but then you follow with a second crop, and then the garlic, in a sense, is kind of your third crop that you can follow with.
We got a tweet from Butternut, and that person says, I have a half-dead boxwood. Tips to revive it. The west side lost its leaves. The east side is looking fine. So west side of the boxwood, not looking good. The east side is. Any advice on what Butternut can do to revive it?
Well, I I would really take a good hard look at the plant and just see if those the west side or whichever side is showing the damage, if those branches are dead, you need to go ahead and prune them all out. And then you're going to look at that plant and say, well, that looks really funny. And so you may just do some corrective pruning on the whole thing and take it all back and just let it rejuvenate itself. And there should be some time left, I think, this year to get some growth out of it.
And boxwoods, too, are very sensitive with salt. So if that side is near a walkway or something that you apply a lot of salt, it takes time for plants to show any symptoms. So this could have been applied this past winter or the winter before. Dog urine that can cause burn to foliage plants as well as to turf. So just be mindful of that.
You know, so many of these plants, like the spruces and boxwood, they were always ones that we just could – they were foolproof. But now we're having a lot of problems with boxwood. We're having a lot of problems with spruce. And just seems like it goes in cycles. But right now, some of those plants that we used to think were foolproof are no longer.
And another point, too, is I remember I had not this year so far, but – a lot of those plants that you mentioned, David, people are putting in containers and putting them near like their front entry door or something like that. And a lot of heat radiates off of brick. And so that side that the plant is facing towards the brick was burning. And just be mindful of that too. You may need to turn your plant every so often, the whole container, just so there isn't any burn.
We've got another. Go ahead. Did you want to weigh on this?
Well, I was just going to say another little tip to figure out if something's branch is dead or not is it's called the scratch test. Mm-hmm. And it works with most woody perennials is that you just can take a knife or an edge of a pruner or something and you just slightly scratch the bark. And if it's green underneath, then it's alive because sometimes these branches will look dead, but when you do that scratch test, they're actually alive. So you don't want to cut off live material. You just want to cut back to what's actually. So it'll just be brown underneath if it's dead all the way through.
We've got another question about garlic. Adam sent us a message and wants to know, when I grow garlic, should I cut off the scapes?
You should definitely cut them off and use them. They're really good in cooking. And the scapes, of course, are just – it's going to seed. So you want that energy going back into the bulb and definitely take those off. But a lot of gourmet cooks just love to have those.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and we continue now with our gardening and landscape experts, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. The number to join our conversation is 513-419-7100. Got a couple of lines open right now. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments or tweets and get those into the show as well. Just before that break, we were talking about garlic. We had a question about whether Adam wanted to know if he should cut the scapes off of the garlic that he grows. And I think we should explain what scapes are for those who don't know and count me among those.
A scape is just the flower head and the seed that comes up from the garlic. And you want to, if you're going to use it or, you need to go ahead while it's still pretty young and tender to cut that out and then use it that way. And as I said, people do cook with it. That's just the theory is that with any bulb, and garlic is a bulb, is that when you take the flower or the seed head out of there, the energy from the plant goes back into, instead of producing the flower and the seed, it goes back into making a larger size bulb.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to get your question in. We'll go to the phone lines now. We've got Heather on the line. Hi, Heather. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have a short variety of lavender, and this year decided, hey, let's go ahead and harvest it, and realized I was a little late for that, but went ahead and cut some of it back a little bit and noticed about half of it is that woody texture, appears not to be green in that, and wondering if at this point if I've killed it or how I can help revive it.
All right, Heather, we'll hang up and let the experts address your question. So she's got some lavender, and she's not sure whether it's alive. First of all, is it too late to harvest it?
I didn't think it was too late, but no. I'm not.
I mean, if the flowers are viable.
Yeah.
I mean, you can harvest it.
Yeah.
You know, if they've, you know, gone to seed, so to speak, and I mean, dropped off and you just have stem there, then obviously you're too late.
Yeah, but so it does become woody the closer you get to the base. You do want to leave some of that silvery foliage there. So I'm not sure, without seeing how you cut it, I don't know.
It may break along that stem and start to produce some flowers, and hopefully you'll get enough of it before frost.
So yeah. Is there any way to address her concerns about maybe half of this plant is dead?
Well, the one thing I would do is wait and see. You know, if there's been a lot of erosion from the rain and there's exposed roots, you may want to make sure you put some soil on top of the roots and just really wait and see what happens in the spring. But at this point, I wouldn't do anything drastic other than, I mean, we've had plenty of moisture, and it's a plant that wants good drainage.
So I'll give it a little TLC and maybe late winter, early spring, maybe if you don't feed it, I would maybe consider feeding it. And similar to what are doing exactly what Peter said about the thumb test, rub against, you know, looking at that wood around the base to see if you see some green foliage or green chlorophyll. So
there's a lot of good garden centers out there that still have good lavender in stock, so you can always replant.
But I've had lavender in the community gardens. I've seen it die back almost to the crown and rejuvenate itself. So that's, I mean, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Bill on the line. Hi, Bill. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I'm having a problem with my lawn. There seems to be a type of grass that's taking over. It's doing well in the high humidity and drought we had recently. And it's a long, tall, light green grass with a red stem to it. And I don't know if it's a grass or some other type of plant, but it's really taking over. I'd like to figure out a way to get rid of it.
Okay,
well, lately.
We'll leave you on the line to see if there's any follow-up questions from our experts here. They look a little perplexed by this question, so.
I'm thinking sedge.
Yeah, that's what I first thought, but then when he said red, I got, so nut sedge is, I mean, it grows like overnight. You can cut, and then it grows like, I don't know, 8 inches overnight, but it's more of like a limey green color, shiny, and it tends, well, it likes moist areas, which is, and then if you ever were to pull it, I think after the second year growth, it actually has these white bulb-like nuts on it that it's called, and that's how it actually spreads. But when you said red in it, I'm not, that's where I lost me.
Yeah, the wonderful thing about it is it's not a grass. It's a sedge, and as such, you can take it out of your lawn with a product that won't hurt your grass. And you'll have to go to a garden center and ask for that. But we're kind of guessing that that's what you have, and we're not sure.
All right, there you go, Bill. Happy hunting out there. Thanks for the call. Next up on the line, we've got Jan. Hi, Jan. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm having a problem with poison ivy growing through the fence from a neighbor's yard. I can cut it back to the edge of the fence. I don't want to spray it because the neighbor's dog likes to come right up to the fence, but I'm not sure how to handle it.
Code enforcement.
No. So my suggestion would be to either, if you have to take an axe, well, one, do it on a morning where you're not, there's not a lot of moisture or high humidity. Cover yourself up. I am highly allergic. So if you can do this earlier on in the season when the plant is not as mature, that is, of course, ideal. But if you take an axe or some type of tool that maybe gives you space, but cutting it at the base and then immediately taking a paintbrush and putting some all-purpose herbicide on that to prevent any type of drift. But as soon as it dries, it will not have any negative effect on animals or plants around it. But also just be very mindful that the oils will stay on your tools, on your clothing, on shoestrings for a year or two. So making sure that you immediately use Dawn liquid soap or just wash your clothing as well.
There you go, Jan. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it very much. Next up on the line is Paul. Hi, Paul. What's your question or comment?
Hi. We have an arborvitae in front of our house. It's an ornamental, about 12 feet tall, I'd say. The top has been completely devoured by bagworms, and they're working their way down. I wondered if you had any advice or suggestions on something that could be used. We were hoping something organic. I did try something from our local Farm and Fleet that was an organic kind, but it didn't effectively remove them.
Okay, Paul, we'll hang up and let the experts address this. He's got some little caterpillars attacking his cedar tree.
Oh.
They're all looking at you, Sarah.
Hand picking is always...
Well, that's what I was going to say, is you just have to get up there and remove the bags.
Yeah, because if you've ever tried to rip one open, Mother Nature is amazing. But if you've ever tried to rip one open...
also kind of disgusting.
Well, yeah, but that's another conversation, maybe around Halloween. But... it's really strong, and even if you were to take a pocket knife and try to open that up, it's pretty incredible. So just thinking about that, having an insecticide get through that is pretty difficult. So, you know, there are spray controls, but it's really timing it. So when the adult emerges, which is typically at the bottom of that, it's called a bag. To actually can control that adult larvae. But I...
Well, if you remove these bags, is there a place you should take them if you wanted to be humane, or have you pretty much ruined that?
You're not going to be humane. Just want to go ahead and put them in something that'll kill them.
David, I'm serious. Short and simple on how we deal with the caterpillar community.
Well, with most insects, too, Dave mentioned this earlier, you can use like a small pail or bagwords, a bucket, and you put some soapy water in it and submerge it in it, and that'll kill them. Now, as a kind of interesting fact, we have chickens, so I took off a bunch of bagworms once. I thought the chickens were going to be, you know, like a field day with these things, and they ran over, looked at them, and just turned their beaks up and walked away.
Hey, so no thanks.
Don't plan on feeding them to your chickens.
No bag lunch for the chickens.
You got to be ruthless sometimes. Yeah.
But it is. You put on a pair of gloves because they're kind of gummy and stuff, but you just have to do that. I mean, unfortunately, it sounds like his tree's not too tall.
Yeah, he said about 12 feet.
Yeah,
and then the tip that is already brown, unfortunately, it's not going to get green again. Right. So I would make sure just to prune that out.
All right, let's get through a few more calls here. We've got Megan on the line. Hi, Megan, what's your question or comment?
Great, thanks. And Jan may be my neighbor, so she can always come talk to me about the poison ivy.
Okay. <Uh-oh>. this could be a good show now. Yeah. Now we've got some neighborly conflict.
Yeah. Awesome. Hopefully another showdown.
All right, Megan, what's going on your side of the fence?
My question is, I'm reclaiming my area, and I have a lot of nice paver work with weeds in it, and then some paths with gravel with weeds in it. And I read about using soap and vinegar and salt on the gravel, but with the pavers, it said not to do that. So I bought a blowtorch attachment for propane that I'd read about online. Do you all have any thoughts about using that on the pavers to burn out the weeds?
Thanks, Megan. We'll hang up and let them answer. We've had the blowtorch question come up over the months during this monthly show, and it sounds like all of you are in favor of it.
Oh, I've got to get one. I just think putting a 3-pound propane tank on my back and going at some weeds. It's just where I want to be.
And then finish the day with creme brulee.
Absolutely.
What song is playing in your head while you're doing that? That's what I want to know.
Some heavy metal, definitely.
But these flavors are not all made equal. There are some flavors are designed so that they have a little plate in the end. So when the flame comes off, it disperses it. So it kind of wafts out. But you want one that shoots out a flame. And it's kind of it's a more concentrated burst. So you want to kind of make sure that, you know, these flames are used for different things. Like when you see them starting controlled fires and forests and stuff, they're probably using these wafting ones. The other ones are more to do that. But they will work. But the thing that you have to remember with them is that you don't stand there until the plant is ash.
Right.
You just go over it. And you may have to come back the next day to do it a second time, but particularly with herbaceous weeds, that really will do the trick. If it's moist out, actually, when you do it, it's actually better because it creates steam and sort of cooks it more. Now, it is less effective with grass. It will kill the grass, but because the grass roots are underneath the rhizome and the runners, that you're really not getting that. And they can come back without, you know, I guess it's not totally without photosynthesis, but it'll come back. But there, it's very effective. But instead of using straight salt in that vinegar mix, you can use Epsom salts. And that's less harsh.
Good advice. All right, we've got just about 90 seconds left. A few people in line here. Let's see how many we can get through. We've got Jean up next. Hi, Jean. Quickly, what's your question or comment?
Yes. Oh, hi. Thank you. I have a hollies problem. I have a row of hollies bushes in front of the window, and then two of them, they're about 16 years old. There are two of them suddenly turn to yellow and leaves drops, and I don't know what's issues. But there's a worm right next to them.
Okay, Jean, so some of her holly bushes have suddenly turned yellow, dropping the leaves while the rest of the leaves are still green. Thanks for the call. Jean, any advice on what might be going on or what you can do?
Well, hollies, you know, evergreens are evergreens, but that doesn't mean that they don't shed old foliage. So if it's got some good green coming on, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But as much water as we've had, if they're in a lower area, it could be a root rot issue. And hollies do get the phytophthora and several other things, so that could be an issue. But if there's good green foliage coming on it and it's just the old foliage that's yellowing and going, I wouldn't be too worried about.
All right. I think those are all the calls we can take. We do have a few people in line. I'm sorry, some good questions. So if you do have your questions and you want to reach out to our experts, all of their contact information is at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition link. Would love to get to them. Or give us a call next month when all of them return. Be happy to field your questions then. I want to make sure that we have some time to talk about what's coming up at your various places. Any special programming that you got going on, David?
We've got, you know, really what we've got the fair coming up on August 5th. And then, of course, we've got our farmer's market is right there in our parking lot. And now is the time to be there. It's green beans, corn, everything is in stock. And even peaches are at our farmer's market right now.
Nothing like a fresh peach in summer. Sarah.
Yep, farmers markets, great opportunity to try new foods, and I like to share recipes there from Kentucky Proud. So, four markets in Campbell County, more information on our website.
And Peter.
Yeah, well, at Turner Farm, we still have, we're doing our weekly work and learn sessions, and you could reach, if you contact Joshua, joshua@turnerfarm.org, and he can afford that on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Awesome.
And ongoing classes at Turner Farm that Melinda O'Brant are teaching.
Well, thanks to Sarah Stoltz from the Campbell County Extension Office. Thanks to Peter Hunninger from the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and Home Meadow Song Farm, and Boone County Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester for another fun monthly gardening show. Appreciate it very much. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Find archives of our program and more details online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.